Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. The popular television drama Criminal Minds follows a team of FBI behavioral analysts from Quantico, Virginia, as they assist in criminal investigations. Greg Vecchi was a member of the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit, and he left Virginia for a job with the FBI in Rapid City before retiring earlier this year. He now lives in Deadwood, where he runs his business, Deadwood Guns, but he stays involved in behavioral analysis as a consultant and teacher. SDPB's Victoria Wicks went to Deadwood and talked with Vecchi about his Deadwood business while sitting in her car, one of the quieter places to talk in town. But she ended up talking with him for about an hour about other things as well, including his real-life work as a member of the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit. Some of the topics discussed may not be suitable for younger or sensitive listeners.
Initially, what we became popular for back then in the early 80s was talking to criminals in prison. And that became the beginning of our focus on interviewing and understanding criminals from the criminal's perspective. In other words, crawling in their minds, understand things from their perspective. And that was a big deal back then that had never been done. Then they started to work on various things like not just understanding the criminal's perspective, but also understanding how their interaction was with the victim and how that, if you studied the victim of the crime or the crime scene, how does that give you an indication of how to identify who the person is? Because it's a whodunit. And essentially, you've got people that are dying and no one knows who's killing them. And so it's kind of a puzzle we have to put together. So one aspect of the profiling that developed was victimology, and that was studying the victims. So you find out that, you know, the victims were all killed near a truck stop. Okay. And they all had green eyes and brown hair. And so, you know, what does that mean?
Some of what you're saying right now I've seen on television. This is familiar territory?
Yeah, it is. It's embellished quite a bit. We certainly don't have that airplane that you see them fly every day on. You know, we take coach or have to drive. But, you know, the thing that I do have to say is that people think that you can profile based on demographics. What is a profile, so-called profile, of the average serial killer? Well, you know, he's going to be a white male, probably. He's probably going to be, you know, 30s, 40s. He's going to have 2.5 kids, you know, and all this other stuff that they come up with. You cannot profile based on demographics. And if you do, it becomes extremely inaccurate, and you might as well flip a coin. What you have to be able to do is identify specific behavioral signatures that can be connected directly to a specific person or group in order to even have a better than 50-50 chance. And that's a common mistake made. And I will have to say that probably the most egregious example of that was the sniper murders in 2002 in Washington, D.C. If you remember, there was a profile put out there that it was a white male, white van. And everyone was looking for the white male and white van. It turned out to be two black guys in a sedan. Okay? Completely different. There are a lot of reasons why that happened. You know, they were put under tremendous pressure because it was absolutely traumatic. People ducking at gas stations. There was an FBI employee that was killed, and it was an awful... It was just like a domestic terrorism event. It was terrible. And so they didn't know, you know, when the next shot was going to come. They had no leads. And so there was tremendous pressure. And all they had was what their previous experience was. And there really wasn't anything. And so they made the mistake of building a profile based on demographics. And that was disastrous.
Where'd they get the white van out of demographics?
The white van and the white male was a combination of a couple of things. One is the you know, the white male was, that's your common, that's what you're going to expect, you know, and they kind of went off based on previous cases, which is a mistake because you cannot profile an unknown offender based on previous cases. You just can't do it. You know, you get an idea what you may want to look for, but it's not specific enough. The white van came from a couple people who reported, just citizens reporting a white van. And so in the haste to put things together, that was the profile. Unfortunately, it was published and unfortunately caused resources to be diverted. I don't know. It was a bad situation. But that's an example of when a profile fails based on case-based reasoning, based on trying to extrapolate what's going to happen or who it is based on another case. You just simply can't do that.
So you have to look at the details of the current case and then start looking at who might be most likely to commit those specific acts under these circumstances?
Right. And you have to essentially develop a behavioral signature that is specific enough that you can tie it to somebody. And if you can't, then you don't do the profile.
So why are people so fascinated with this? Or maybe I'm just fascinated with it. But some of these shows have been on TV forever with those investigators who are just so omniscient. Is it our desire to be that way ourselves so we can see everything coming and not get caught by surprise? Or is there something sexy about the field that just draws people in?
Well, I think that, of all the things that I studied and did when I was in the behavioral science unit, it's still the one that comes back is the serial killers. The guys that will stalk you and grab you and do horrible things to you and then wait and cool off and then go and they do their next killing. And these guys, many of them lead very, what you would consider, normal lives. I mean, if you look at, let's say, John Wayne Gacy, who was a killer clown, he was a pillar of his community. He would dress up as a clown and he would go to birthday parties, right? And this was in the Chicago area. And he was a homosexual, and his target population, his victim population, were late teens, early 20 males, okay? And what he would do is he had a little show he would put on, and he would do these handcuff things, and, when he would do his, like, birthday parties and stuff like this. And, so he would had these trick handcuffs. And so what he would do is he would lure the kid over to his house, the boy over to his house. And, they would sit down and drink and have fun and talk and stuff. He was very easy to get along with. He was a psychopath, right? So, one of the indicators or characteristics of a psychopath is that they're likable, right? So they're very easy to talk to. So your guard goes down. And then he would bring these kids in, and he would have them handcuff him behind his back, right? So the kid would handcuff John Wayne Gacy. And it were trick handcuffs, and he would get out of them, and he would show them how to do it. He's looking, now my turn. And he would put the real handcuffs on them, and then he would systematically rape and kill them. And the reason he got caught was because he was hiding the bodies or stuffed the bodies under the crawl space of his house. One time, a kid got loose and ran from him, told the police. The police really didn't even believe it because he's like, are you kidding me? The clown? No, there's no way. We'll go check it out anyway. Well, the stench was unbelievable when they walked in there, and of course, they caught him and stuff like this. BTK, the bind, torture, kill. He basically had a wife and kids, and he was a churchgoer and stuff like this. And the only reason that they found out about his activities, about killing people, now he did over a long period of time. And because they found some stuff on the hard drive in the church computer. Okay. So I think that's the draw for people is that you've got people that can actually do this thing to another human being. And it's just it's kind of sexy in a very macabre way, in a very weird way, in that it's just it's fascinating to people that to look at other people who could actually do that to a human being, because for the thought of doing any of this stuff to you or me is just repulsive. We wouldn't even think about it. But to think that it was, and then you start learning more about them, and it's very, very interesting. I mean, there's even serial killer groupies out there. There's a complete underground kind of an underground society, so to speak, whatever, of these groupies that come together. And there's an old, I don't know if it's still active, but there used to be a website you could go to called serialkillercalendar.com. And you could buy trading cards. You can buy books about these guys. They even have clocks with their faces on them, with the hands, coming out of their nose, around there. And all this other crazy stuff. And these people are just enamored by them. So I think the answer to your question is, it's just the thought that someone, it's so outrageous what they do as far as the degree of cruelty and the degree of trauma and the degree of just unbelievable violence and torture and things that they do.
I've kind of wondered, though, if the average person has this really dark side. Most of us manage to not realize that, we kind of just keep it over there. But when we see a serial killer or hear about a serial killer, we congratulate ourselves that at least we're not that weird.
Yeah, I think you're right. But it's interesting you say that, as far as that. I think we all do. I think all of us have a dark side. I think all of us, you just want to pound that guy's head in because he just cut you off, or you want to just stab that person. You just want to smack him to shut him up. And all this stuff goes through your mind, but we don't act on it, mm-hmm. Right? These guys do. And the reason they do is because most of these guys, the commonality of at least with the serial killers and the real extreme ones that you see, like Jeffrey Dahmer and John Wayne Gacy and Keith Hunter Jesperson, they all have one thing in common, and they have antisocial personality disorder. And when you hear the word psychopath or sociopath, those are just variations of antisocial personality disorder, which is a real personality disorder. If it's someone who has not reached their 18th birthday and they have that personality disorder, it's called conduct disorder. But conduct disorder, antisocial personality disorder, which is the proper term, the clinical term, psychopath, sociopath, which are just different degrees of it, the characteristics are, first, they have no remorse. They literally have no remorse. It's not that they pretend not to have remorse, but if they kill somebody or they hurt somebody, they absolutely feel nothing. They don't feel bad about it. It's really like nothing. And I like to make a kind of comparison that from the standpoint of a serial killer, if they break a pencil or break somebody's neck, the actual feeling they have is the same. It's nothing.
Why would they do it then if they are not getting that big charge out of it?
Well, because they do get a charge out of it, because part of the other characteristics is the fact that they get like a God complex, and they like control, they like the power, and they like the idea that, you know, they can control somebody. And that's where you get in this weird stuff where they're getting people drilling in people's heads and trying to make them zombies. That's what Dahmer did. You know, he would eat part of bodies and he would like drill into their head with a drill bit. He wanted to make walking zombies and have them be his like servants or his, you know, his slaves or whatever. Just crazy stuff.
Just his friends.
Yeah, or just his friends. Yeah, yeah.
Couldn't get any other way.
Exactly. But you know, the characteristic, at least with serial killers, many of them, is you go back to this, they're psychopaths. They don't take responsibility. They will be held accountable. They're very impulsive. They have no remorse. And they need to be stimulated, and they like control, and they like to control others. And then you tie in narcissism, which is kind of like a God complex, where they feel that they can determine on who lives and who dies, and it's at their whim. And so they even get to the point where they, you know, will choke somebody until they almost die, and then they let them go, and then they do it, and they enjoy that. And even some of them enjoy it, even to the fact that they like to watch people die in front of them. And it gives them this sense of God, this sense of being God, sense of control and things like this, and they get off on it. And a lot of it, it's a sexual gratification. There are two serial killers, Bittaker and Norris, back in, I think it was in the 70s. They were in California. They had this van, and it was all decked out. On the inside, it's basically a mobile torture chamber, and it was completely insulated for sound, so you couldn't hear what was going on. And they would pick up women, and they would chain them up, and they would torture them. Now, they would record the killings, and then they would kill the girl, dump the body, whatever, you know, dispose of the body, however they did it, and then they would then listen to these recordings and relive it, and they would sexually gratify themselves by doing so. So that's the type of, I guess that's, you know, that horrible stuff, that just outrageous stuff that you wouldn't even think of, that you could never think of your own, let alone do. Not only they thought about it, but they actually acted on it. And I think that is just fascinating for people. And I think that will always be, you know, a topic for movies, a topic for conversation, you know, a topic for radio interviews, you know, but it is much more. There's much more to it than that. These behavioral principles and things can be applied to all kinds of offenders, and it can even be applied in business.
Is there something in a young person's life, that a child's life, that leads them to grow up to be antisocial?
Well, the short answer is no. First and foremost, antisocial personality disorder is a personality disorder. It is something that a person is born with. They can't fix it. They can't change it. Now, they can manage it. And there are degrees of the disorder. Okay? There are a lot of functional psychopaths out there. And these are sometimes referred to as sociopaths. A sociopath, you probably know a few. These are people that treat other people like crap. They take advantage of them. You'll see these people in corporations. You know, people that reach the highest levels of corporate America, many of them are sociopaths. They have these shallow relationships. They manipulate people. They basically screw these guys. They screw each other. They, you know, they don't care. There's no sense of remorse. And they do anything, then they just basically, you know, leave the bodies laying as they go up. But they don't commit any crimes. You'll see this in government a lot. You know, there are there are sociopaths in the FBI who were, you know, very high level bosses and things like this. And the characteristics are all the same. So it can be managed, but it, you know, as far as what triggers them to go to go from, you know, kind of being kind of a jerk, you know, to actually a serial killer, there are some things that can factor in to jump them over that inhibition. Sometimes, you know, there's some anecdotal evidence. It's not always that if you look back into serial killers' lives, when they were young, they were cruel to animals, they wet their bed, and they like to start fires. That has been shown, some of those elements have been shown to be consistent through some of the real bad ones that you see. But certainly, you know, childhood events and, you know, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, like bad relationships. So they hated their mother, beat them. They hated their mother. They hated their father. They had a girlfriend that betrayed them. They had a girlfriend who embarrassed them, or a wife that, you know, cheated on them for years and didn't know. And so stuff like that can contribute to them actually going from ideation, you know, thinking about it, to actually doing it. So it's really kind of a murky, gray, slippery situation there, and that's the reason it's really hard to predict.
That's SDPB's Victoria Wick speaking with Greg Vecchi, a former member of the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit. He retired earlier this year and now runs Deadwood Guns, and you can hear more about his business this afternoon with a report from Victoria Wicks. You can hear that during the local broadcast of All Things Considered.